Blog Talk Radio.
Who is January Jones? She is not a young, beautiful, talented actress on Mad Men. She is not an older, gorgeous, exotic dancer from the Johnny Carson Show. She is an author, and she wrote Thou Shall Not Whine, the 11th Commandment, that reached number one at Amazon.com. She is a reality TV golf personality with World High Stakes Golf televised on HDNet. She is a humorist and winologist expert. She is your featured host today on January Jones Sharing Success Stories. So sit back, relax, and get ready to laugh and listen to Ms. Jones with her eclectic roster of guests as you learn life's lessons. These stories plus sharing equals success. Welcome, and remember, beware, because you are entering the no-whining world of January Jones.
Now, let me ask you a question.
Yes.
Have you ever wanted to be a singer? I think we all have at some time or other in our lives. Tell me, do you know?
I did have a hidden desire to sing years and years ago when I was a small child. That's all I used to do. My mother said I sang. I was singing before I even learned how to talk.
Oh,
my
gosh.
I was singing in my crib. She would come into the room, and I'm standing up in my crib just singing, playing with my toes when I could reach them in, and just singing away. And I used to pretend as I got older, I would sing, of course, all over the house. And my mother took me to a couple of TV shows, and you might remember January, like was it Ed McKenzie, Amateur Hour, and Starlight to the Stars. I can't.
Oh yeah.
That.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was amazing because it shows how fate works. Each time, and they wanted me to come back and be on the show, but each time, the first time, was when my mother's brother, her only sibling, died suddenly at the age of 32 from tuberculosis.
Oh dear.
So under much of a dither, you know, depression to take me. And so then a year later, when I think it was at McKenzie Amateur Hour, they called for me to be on it. And her mother died suddenly of a stroke at, grandmama was 52. So I guess it was like fate saying no. God was saying, no, I don't want her to do that right now, or whatever. I don't know. It could have been the enemy putting a stumbling block in my path. I don't know, but it didn't happen. And I was the extrovert in the family, and my sister Frieda was always the introvert. And it was shortly thereafter, well, a couple of years later, I think, where everything changed, and I became the introvert, and Frieda became the extrovert.
Wow, that is so interesting that you would have a role reversal. For my listeners, we're interviewing today the wonderful Sherry Payne, who was with the Supremes, and she's also involved with the former ladies of the Supremes Floss. Yes. Sherry is here today as Tom and Gracias and Jared Kaminsky's guest, and she is featured in their wonderful, wonderful book, One Door Closes. She's chapter 13, and I read it this morning, and it was fascinating. I really felt like I got to know a little bit more about Sherry Payne. She was the co-lead singer of the Supremes from 1973 to 1977. Because of her powerful voice and petite stature of only 5'2", she is sometimes referred to as the little lady with the big voice. As a new Supreme in an era when their popularity was waning because reporters were still asking about Diana Ross, she arrived. Original Supreme Mary Wilson and Cindy Birdsong were the other two members of the group. She gained recognition for her vocals, He's My Man, taken from the album The Supremes. Tom, would you like to ask Sherry a few questions?
Sure, I would love to. And this is such a thrill for me because I have known Sherry for almost 40 years now. I met Sherry for the first time backstage after a Supremes concert in Pittsburgh in December of 1975, and she, oh my God, she is such a wonderful talent, and in addition to her musical talent. And Sherry, I'm probably gonna embarrass you now. But you know, she's you know, in addition to being such a wonderful singer and having this wonderful show business and performing background, she is an amazing songwriter.
Mm-hmm.
She, Sherry, you've written what, over 15 theatrical scripts, screenplays and theatrical scripts as well, haven't you?
Exactly 18. I'm on my 19th.
18. Okay. So you know, Sherry has, you know, she does it all. So but Sherry, you didn't necessarily originally start out to be a singer, though, did you? I think, if I remember correctly, you wanted to go to medical school. You wanted to be a doctor.
I always had that yearning to be a pediatrician. I love children, and I wanted to be a pediatrician. And so after graduating from Central High in Detroit, I went to Michigan State and started off in pre-med. And after a couple of years, I realized, well, maybe I should change to something else. I couldn't concentrate. I realized maybe that's not what I really wanted to do. And so, because I had so many credits in that field, a girlfriend of mine, Sandy Sims Farrelly, suggested, why don't I go into medical technology? Because that's what she was majoring in. And we had both known each other since junior high school, the seventh grade, in the same homeroom, and still friends to this very day.
Mm.
And so I changed my major to medical technology, and that's what I graduated in. I got a BA. I'm getting tongue-tied. Rather, a Bachelor of Science degree in medical technology, and I graduated in 1966 from Michigan State. And I realized then that's not what I really wanted to do. Actually, I didn't know what I wanted to do. And that's the truth. And so after being home for a little while, my mother said, well, you're not going to just sit around the house doing nothing. You're going to do something. After I spent all this money on your college education, and back then, I think it was like $1,200 for a semester, for a year, and that was a lot of money back then.
It sure was.
Yeah, it was. I was telling somebody just last night, I remember when the Cadillac Eldorado came out in what year was it, whatever it was, and it was almost $7,000, and people couldn't believe it. $7,000 for a car?
Right.
But anyway, not getting back to the subject. So I started teaching school and taking more postgraduate courses at Wayne State University. And then one day I was at home, and my sister had come home. She was living in New York, and she had just signed a record contract with Invictus Records, Holland Dozier Holland, who was the songwriting team at Motown and had written all the hits for the Supremes and the Four Tops and a few others, and they had left Motown and formed their own company, Invictus Records, Invictus Hot Wax. And so Frida was in town, and Edward had called on the phone, and she was talking to him in the kitchen, and I sat down at the piano and purposely playing as loudly as I could one of the songs I had written. And Edward called me to the phone and said, what was that you were playing? And I said, oh, just one of the songs I'd written. I have a whole bunch. And he said, oh, do you think you might want to come audition for our company? I like what I heard. I said, I don't care. And those are my exact words. I don't care. And so he said, a car Ron Dunbar came and picked me up, took me over to Lamont Dozier's house. And I sat and played. Edward and Brian were there. Edward and Brian Holland, Jeffrey Bowen, and a couple others. And so I sat and played about four or five of my tunes. And the next day I went down to their office and signed a contract. So,
wow.
And then they put me into a group because they said, well, they already had Frida. They had, I think, Eloise Laws, they had just signed her. They had a girls group, the Honeycomb, that they had just signed.
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah, Laura Lee was another female artist. So they didn't need another female artist, especially since Frida and I are sisters. So they said, we'll build a group around you. It'll be you and Ty Hunter, who was a fantastic tenor voice and had several hits on his own single records when he was with Chess Records. But anyway, so they put Ty and I together and then put two other people with us. The first actually was Gloria Hendry, who went on. She was with us for several months, and then she decided that's not what she wanted to do, and she went back to New York, where she was originally from, and she was, I think, a Playboy buddy. But anyway, she went on to become one of the first James Bond girls, black,
female.
Oh, wow.
Actors. Huh. Yeah, yeah. And we are close friends to this day. Mm-hmm. Gloria Hendry. She was in there. She starred in Live or Let Die with, was it Roger? I can't remember which James Bond. Was it Roger Moore or Sean Connery?
Yeah.
But anyway, so getting back to the Glass House. So we recorded Crumbs Off the Table, which I co-wrote. Frida says I wrote the whole thing, but I said, well, I co-wrote it, whatever. And it was a minor hit. And also, I recorded another song, and it was a few months later, almost a year later, and I heard Barney Perkins playing it in the engineer's room when I went into the studio. And I'm sitting there listening. I said, oh, I haven't heard this in a long time. But near the end, I said, wait a minute, that's not me singing, because it was a little curly cue riff or something that was different than what I had done.
Uh-huh.
And he said, no, that's Aetna. I said, Aetna? He said, yeah, they gave it to the Honeycomb. I said, oh, okay. And
okay.
I wasn't
wow.
too upset about it. Now, Aetna to this day says that she was coming in the studio, and I was going out after I recorded, and she said, Sherry, that's a bad And I said, mm-hmm. well, no. She said, I said, oh, I don't care. You want it? You can have it. I don't remember that conversation, but that's the way it happened. She ended up singing it and want ads.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Want ads. Multi-million seller that put the Honeycomb on its track.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Sherry, can I ask you a question? How old were you when you signed your first contract?
With Invictus, let's see, I must have been, that was in 1968.
Okay.
Ooh.
Okay. you were just a baby. You were
just,
only, and, but well, your sister was already touring, right?
Yeah, she was, okay. Frida actually grew up as a jazz singer. She's prolific in jazz. That's her forte. And her idols were Ella Fitzgerald and Lena Horne and Sarah Vaughan and Edie Gourmet and it was a plethora of those jazz singers. My mentors were Billie Holiday and Gloria Lynn.
Oh, wow.
I had to learn how to sing R&B. I listened to Aretha and a couple of others because I didn't know anything about ad-libbing and stuff like that. I loved Gloria Lynn and Billie Holiday, and I would go in the basement, or rec room, as we called it, recreation room in our homes in Detroit. They don't have too many of them out here, but
right, yeah.
We had rec rooms in Detroit, as January would probably know. And I would turn on the three-pole colored lamp pole, and red, blue, and a yellow light, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I would fix it on my face, and then I'd put on either Billie Holiday or Gloria Lynn, one of their
uh-huh.
albums. And I would sing the whole album, and I would pretend like I was Billie Holiday or Gloria Lynn, and I was in my world. And,
oh, that sounds like so much fun. You know, we're going to take a break and hear from our sponsors. And when we come back with Tom Jarrett and their special guest, Sherry Payne, we're going to hear, Jarrett's going to talk to Sherry about what it was like touring with the most famous female group in the world. We'll be right back.
All righty.
Do you desire more control over your money and financial matters? Would you like simple solutions to complex financial topics? Do you want more security in your financial future? If you answered yes to any of these questions, the book 101 Principles to Wealth is your answer. It's available now on Amazon.com. That's 101 Principles to Wealth by Charles Brokop. Order today.
Do you want to learn how to live into your dreams? One Door Closes, Overcoming Adversity by Following Your Dreams. The new book by Tom Ingracia and Jared Kredimski captures the thought-provoking stories of 16 people from all walks of life who have triumphed over adversity to achieve their goals. Plus, you'll get 10 self-assessment tools to design your own blueprint for success. Unlock your true potential. Fulfill your dreams. Be inspired. One Door Closes is available from Amazon.com.
Welcome back with our special guests, Tom Ingracias and Jared Kaminsky, the authors of One Door Closes, Overcoming Adversity by Following Your Dreams, with their special guest today, Sherry Payne, who is featured in Chapter 13 of their wonderful book. Jared, would you like to ask Sherry some questions?
I would love to. Sherry, first, I'd just like to say hello, because I've heard much about you. It's so good to finally hear your voice.
Tom
has talked about you incessantly, of course. What I really wanted to know is just what it was like to be a member of the most famous female group in the world. It's not anything I ever wanted to be part of a female girl group, but what was it like, and what were some of the challenges that you faced?
Well, first, it was really daunting when I first got the call. Lamont Dozier, who at that time was my boyfriend, and he had come out to Los Angeles and saw Mary Wilson at a party, and she told him that Gene Terrell was leading the group and they were looking for another lead singer. So naturally, he told her about me. And so Mary called me, we spoke, and shared some information. Then I sent my copy of my album and some pictures, and so then she called me. I remember it was a Thursday, and that Saturday, I was on a plane coming to L.A., but not before I went home that Thursday night, because I was at my good friends, Walter and Barbara Gaines, from the Originals singing group. I was saying when I got home after speaking with Mary and tell her I would come, I said, oh, my God, am I crazy? The Supremes? Oh, no, I can't do this. I can't. I'm too scared. And my mother gave me that mother talk. Mm-hmm. You know, I believe in you. You can do this, and blah 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 blah. And so Jimmy kept talking. So I got on the plane that Saturday morning, came on out in Cindy Bird's song, picked me up at the airport, took me straight to Mary's house, and we started rehearsing that Saturday afternoon. As I got there, suitcases in the hallway, and because they had their job that following Saturday in New Mexico at the State Fair. So I had a lot of, I had to be drilled, and we rehearsed and rehearsed and rehearsed, and Mary shared some of the leads with me, because I couldn't learn all those songs in, 5 days?
Yeah.
Or whatever. Yeah. So, but we got through it, and so Bill Loeb, the manager, and Mary said, you know, get through this show. If you do a great job, you got the position. And so... then the rest is history.
Sherry, could you share with my listeners, share with them a little bit about what it's like to go out on the road on tour? Could you share some of the worst things and then share some of the best things about touring?
Oh, well, I think the worst things about touring, maybe the packing. Especially for women, you know, you want to take everything, but you can't, naturally. But flying first class, that was one of the great things. And flying to places I never would have dreamt that I could have gone to had it not been for being a member in the Supremes. You know, coming from Detroit, I remember taking Spanish in junior high school and then a year up at Michigan State. And then I thought, learning Spanish, I'm never going to have a chance to use it. Being in Detroit. Oh, my goodness, if I had been more serious about it then. But things like that. But the idea of going to the Philippines, Japan, South Africa, Malaysia, Australia, New Zealand, you couldn't even begin to imagine. Uh-huh. And actually, especially since I never realized that I was going to have a professional career as a singer. Now, my sister had been to Europe and... let's see, where else? Well, she had been all over Europe, England, even before, when I was still in Michigan State. She was a jazz singer and had an album and so forth. And
Cindy
Jones was her mentor. And actually, Berry Gordy had Frida as an artist before he even had Motown. But he and my mother could not come to terms over the contract because she was only 16 at the time.
Oh, gee.
Yeah.
I never knew that.
Yeah, right. Yeah, Marv Johnson would pick Frida up and take her to rehearsal with Barry's apartment and on the boulevard. And when it came time to sign the contract, my mother said it was too long. It would take her past her 21st birthday, so she wouldn't sign. And so Barry was strong-minded, and so was my mother. And actually, they had sort of grown up together because my mother worked in his parents' grocery store as a teen. And they all went to the same church, Bethel AME, on St. Etwine, and I think whatever the street was. So it's seen his sisters, his parents, everything. So it was almost like a family. Mm-hmm. But, now I forgot what I was talking about.
Well, you know, I was asking you about the best and worst things of touring.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know,
right.
As I'm listening to you, you were really living every girl, young girl's dream in the 60s,
absolutely,
especially
January.
Young girls in Detroit. We all wanted to go somewhere.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I remember when this was before Jean Terrell joined the group. I just have to mention that we were at an affair, my mother and I, and she was sitting right next to Esther Gordy Edwards. And, of course, they had grown up in the church together, and they knew one another, and they were talking. And then Esther mentioned that Diana was leaving the group, and they were looking for another lead singer. So my mother started telling her about me. And I got so upset with my mother. Be quiet. What are you doing? She said, well, they should use you. You could be take Diana's place. I said, no, are you crazy? I didn't say tell her crazy, but I'm thinking, is she crazy? I said, no, be quiet. Don't say anything. I was too scared back then.
Uh-huh.
I didn't have the confidence in myself. Had I would have just leapt at the opportunity. But getting back to the great things, meeting so many different people all over the world, the wonderful fans that I met, some who are dear friends to this day, like Jim Saffin in Fairlight, England, and Steve Weaver in Birmingham, and Linda DiStefano in Rochester, New York, and Nick Strange and Norman Simmons, and my dear Randy, I call him my little Randy Cabarelli. And I mean, I met so many wonderful people, Tom Gracia, Bill Seagreaves, who just came to see the show last week, and Tony Bond, Tony Williams, Tony Ross. I mean, I've met so many wonderful people over the years because of the group. But the touring to go to South Africa and be shown the island where Nelson Mandela was being imprisoned. And, of course, I'd never heard of him back then. That was the first time. They said, we have a political prisoner, and he's right there. You can see. And I have it on film, too, videotape.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, 1975, and they said he's been in prison for political activity, antagonistic activity against the government, blah, 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 blah. I had that all on film. Like that. Now, some of the worst things were like the time in Japan where I fell onto the stage. Going up the steps, and I fell onto the stage, flat on my face. And then another time in, I think it was Evanston, Illinois, I think, or Indiana, and I fell off the stage. It was a small stage in this club, and Cindy and Mary and I were performing. We were doing the song He's My Man, and they said, now remember, you just have a little room here, so you can't do a lot of stuff. And I said, okay. So we're doing He's My Man, and I step around on the right side, and I went to say, He's My Man, and I outstretched my arm. And I went right on over, and I remember looking back, and Cindy had this look of horror on her face as she was trying to reach her arm out to catch me, but it was too late. And I fell again in my gown with the microphone still in hand, flat on the floor, and nobody got up to help me. In the
oh, my
meal.
God.
That was the worst part. Nobody helped me. And I'd managed to get up splinters in my hand, and I had to walk to the front of the stage to get back up, you know, the steps to go back onto the stage.
Oh, embarrassing.
And when I did, I got back on the stage and smoothed out my gown. And then I said, well, Mary and Cindy know that he is really my man. That's why they pushed me off the stage. And everybody started laughing.
Oh, my God, what a great save.
Yeah, they thought it was part of the act.
Oh, that's perfect.
That's fantastic. Talk about improvising. Did you suffer from jet lag?
Yeah, there were times, probably many times, because of the time differences, and I wasn't used to it back then. Now I'm really used to it, and I know, for instance, we go to, I remember the time, this was maybe 14 years ago, We flew to Norway for a show, Linda and Freddie Poole and I, and I came back, got off the plane, came home, showered, and then went to do a my own solo show at Sunset Junction, which was an outdoor festival here in L.A.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, that's
well,
a lot.
Things like
that's,
that. But I would tell people the best thing to do is stay up as late as you can. Like when I go to, say, Japan or Australia or wherever I'm going, England, I arrive there, I unpack, I have a nice little meal. I stay up as late as I can, so I try to get on their time zone. And then reversely, I do the same thing when I come home. I get back, I unpack. I always unpack as soon as I walk in the door, and don't procrastinate. I unpack and then stay up as late as I can, possibly can, because normally I go to bed around 12, 30, 1 o'clock. So I try to stay up to at least 11 or midnight.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm back on my schedule the next day.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I might get a little tired like around 5 or 6 in the afternoon, but I don't take naps. I do not take naps.
You know, we have to take a we can't take a nap now, but we do have to take a break.
Oh, okay.
And when we come back with Tom and Jared and Sherry, we're going to talk a little bit about the logistics of traveling as one of the Supremes, and also we're going to talk about their websites and where you can get their books and what Sherry will be doing in the near future. We'll be right back.
Everyone deserves a happy life. Life is supposed to be fun. Your life is supposed to feel good, and you're meant to feel happiness in your life and to satisfy your dreams. And you can. Because the only reason anyone wants anything or does anything is that they think they will feel better in the having of it or the doing of it. They think they will feel better in the experiencing of it. Coming soon, a website where you can learn more on how you can have the life you deserve at afeelgoodworld.com. Lately, there's a whining epidemic in our world. People are even whining about whining. Are you sick and tired of listening to everyone whining all the time? So was January Jones, the author of Thou Shall Not Whine, the 11th commandment that reached number one at Amazon.com. Ms. Jones based her book on a survey of the top 10 things that people whine about at all ages and all stages of life. January is a success coach that can tell you how to help others. When you buy Thou Shalt Not Whine, the 11th commandment, you'll find out what people whine about and how to stop them from whining. This is the perfect gift book to give or get for any occasion. Thou Shalt Not Whine was voted the best gift to be given anonymously for those special people in your life. Ms. Jones is an internationally known author in the style of Irma Bombeck, specializing in housewife humor, with her book being published in Korea and China. You can find Thou Shalt Not Whine at Amazon.com.
Now it's time to sit back and relax, and I want all of you to enjoy this fabulous interview. And while you're doing that, pour yourself a glass of wine, but remember, no whining. Have some cheese and crackers and lots of chocolate. Tom, I'll let you take over for a little bit.
All right. Well, Sherry, one thing I want to touch on a little bit is in your chapter in our book, One Door Closes, one of the stories you relate really kind of focuses on how the words we say to our children can impact their lives, either positively or negatively, well into adulthood. And so I want you, maybe if you would share just a little bit about that. And the story that I remember in particular you shared is when you were a child and you and Frida were both in a talent show.
Yes.
And you did win that talent show, and a family member afterwards, and I think you were maybe 11 years old or so, maybe not even that old, said, well, you weren't good enough. And then a little bit later, you know, when you were getting ready to go to college and had this dream, this aspiration of going to medical school, another family member said, well, good luck with that. How did that impact you later in life, that, you know, those incidences of as a child being told that you weren't good enough. Did that affect your confidence later in life?
Oh, absolutely. It was like an epiphany that went off in my mind earlier this year. I think we were talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
And because I often wonder what happened in my life that made me change from being this extroverted child who, wouldn't shut up when people wanted me, when my mother had company over, and I would just get on the floor and start singing, and then I would ask them if they wanted to hear the song again, and before they could even reply, I would just start singing again. Whereas my sister, the opposite, she wouldn't even sing in front of our mother. She was so bashful. She would make Mama go behind a curtain or go in another room. But when I thought about it and during our interview, I said, hey, wait a minute. It was when we were doing a talent contest in Detroit at Jefferson Beach, I think it was. And I was in the junior division, Frida in the senior division. And Frida won in the senior division, and I had done my part. And when I came down from the stage, my father, Fred Payne, was there with us. He had taken us. And I walked up to him, and the first thing he said, you didn't sound very good. Oh, my God.
Yeah, then, wow.
That was like taking a knife and putting it into me. Yeah. And then the other incident was his brother, my Uncle James. And I had come home from Michigan State on a weekend or whatever, and he had come over to visit, and he asked me, well, what are you majoring in? What are you going to be? I said, I'm going to be a doctor. And he says, you'll never make it.
Oh.
Those are exact words. I mean, I could have fluffed it off, but apparently I was wounded already. My self-esteem was not very high. My confidence in myself, but I've struggled with low self-esteem for many years, and I think that's been my failing point. And I remember when Tom asked me what was the biggest obstacle in my life, in my path, that I feel that really held me back, I said the biggest obstacle was me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's true with a lot of people.
Yes, yeah. And because we don't think about how the words we're saying to our children, what the impact that they're going to have on them. You know, they're just words coming out of our mouth, and we're not thinking about what those words mean to those young ears who are hearing them.
That's right. That's why you have to be encouraging. Let me tell you, when my sister was just really little, I was always smart in school, and my mother never had to help me with homework, but Frida had a little bit of a struggle, especially with math and things like that. And not to say that she wasn't smart, she was, but, you know, each child is different, and you have to treat them differently. But my mother didn't really know, and since I was the baby and the younger one and the extrovert with all this booming personality and up in people's faces, she sort of doted on me and always telling people, you know, this is a baby and blah, 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 blah. So a lot of times when Frida would take a doll of mine and she would maybe take a fingernail file and carve into it, or she would do little mean things. And my mother couldn't figure out what was wrong with her. And when she was trying to help with homework, she couldn't get it. And she would say, why are you so stupid? And Frida talked about that much later, and my mother was so heartbroken, she didn't realize the damage she had done and was doing. And she had a psychologist. She thought something was wrong with Frida, especially doing the little damaging things to, like, my toys and stuff. And so she called a friend who was a psychologist, and she took her down in the basement and talked to her for a long time. And she came back up and said, the only thing, there's nothing wrong with your daughter. She just feels like she is not loved.
Oh, dear.
Sure.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Wow.
Whoa.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I see so many parents so many times when the way they talk to their children and, you know, they snap them up, they don't want to encourage them. It's just heartbreaking. It's really heart-wrenching when I hear some of these parents, the way they talk to their kids.
Yeah. I think one of the things, Sherry, I think it's important for you to hear this. I think one of the things that has been so powerful about your chapter in the book, and, you know, and you're sharing about your struggles with self-esteem and your struggles with depression, we've had a number of people say to us, wow, I'm struggling with those same things too. If she could overcome those things, that gives me hope that I can overcome them too. And so, you know, it's so important that we realize and understand that, you know, again, it doesn't matter where you are in life. It doesn't matter if you're, you know, on top of the world and world famous, or if you're what we like to call just an ordinary person, we all struggle with those same things. And so, you know, having you share those stories has really made an impact on people's lives. I want you to know that you are making a difference in people's lives by being so open and so honest about some of the struggles that you've had.
Oh, good. Well, I'm glad, because it's not that the parents don't love the kids. They do.
Right.
They just don't realize what they're saying, you know.
Yeah.
You know, words are powerful, and we have to monitor what we say to little ones. But right now, I'd like to hear some powerful words about your websites and your books, some information for my listeners so they can buy your book and follow Sherry's career.
Tom, let her go.
Tom, you're on.
Your website is Sherry and Linda of the Supremes.com. Do I have that right?
I think Sherry and Linda of the Supremes.
Sherry and Linda of the Supremes.com.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
I think, and so that's where people could go to find out where you're going to be appearing next and what projects you're working on. You have this really great project that you're working on right now. I mean, you just got back together with Susay Green, who was another member of the Supremes when you were in the group, so maybe talk a little bit about that reunion concert that you just did and what your plans are for the future with that, with you and Susay now getting out to perform some of the songs that you recorded after the Supremes disbanded, when you and Susay continued on for a while as a duo and came out in 1979 with your partner's LP, but never really had a chance to promote it or to perform any of those songs. So what was going on with that?
Well, Susay gave me a call, and this is after 20 Feet from Stardom, the documentary that won an Oscar, had come out.
Yeah.
And Susay was had a part in that, as well as my friend Charlotte Crossley. And Mabel John, and they wanted to have this concert and have guest artists like myself at Tata Vega, who was also in 20 Feet. So then things changed, and then it became something that Susay and I were going to do. And Universal Japan had just released, due to the urgings of so many of the fans, the album that we did back in 79, they released it on CD, Partners. And she said, let's do a concert featuring tunes from the Partners album. And I said, fine. And Charlotte Crossley opened for us, and we had some other acts, a couple other acts. And it was just really wonderful. It was July 5th here in L.A. at the Sheraton Gateway Hotel. We had a wonderful turnout. Lamont Dozier came, and Brenda Russell, and Tata Vega, just to name a few of the artists, my sister Frida. And we had a wonderful time. Some of the fans, like Tony Vaughn, Bill C. Greaves, came from Dallas. And it was just great, a great time. And we do plan on taking the concert on the road. We just need to have some venues, and we'll go wherever they want us. We're more than happy.
and I think I read somewhere, because all of the reviews I was reading in the media about the show were just absolutely glowing. But I think I read in one of the newspaper articles that you're using a portion of the proceeds from your concerts, with Susay, the Partners concert, to benefit youth initiatives.
Yes, right. This is something that Susay has a passion for, and so that's her baby. So I said, go for it.
Yeah.
So we're just ecstatic that we can do something like that. And of course, in the future, we'd like to be able to do something for breast cancer, since I am a breast cancer survivor.
Yeah, that's another important part of your story too. With breast cancer and surviving breast cancer too. So that you know, that was another piece that people have really turned into, and I think has given some people hope and so that's been a very positive thing as well. Jared, why don't you jump in? Because I think you've got a question for Sherry,
well,
too.
Well, you know, Tom, before Jared comes on, I have to take a break for commercial. And when we come back, Jared, I'd like you to share the website information and tell my listeners where they can get One Door Closes. We'll be right back with Jared, Tom, and Sherry.
Okay. Have you ever met someone who was unforgettable? Someone who has touched your heart and soul? People who have faced difficult problems. People who have fearlessly shared their stories, their struggles, and their successes. People who have priceless personalities. In my new book, Priceless Personalities, Success Stories Shared by January Jones, I am honored to be able to share with you people dealing with problems such as incest, molestation, child abuse, drug abuse, polygamy, unemployment, scandal, starting over, self-esteem, and workplace issues. My guests have all been exciting, eclectic, and energizing. They will amaze, amuse, and even astonish you. You will adore getting to meet them at Amazon.com. My book is now available, 2-for-1, paperback and Kindle editions.
Are you a fitness professional, a trainer, or a coach? Would you like consistent and timely updates on your team's performance? We have a completely customizable app that can give you real-time information via the internet or your handheld phone. Track the performance of your client's progress with their physical fitness regimen. Track team members' performance or schedule a workout session. Meet up at the gym, on the bike trail, or wherever your physical activities take you. The app is called Socially Fit, or SoFit, and can be found on the iTunes Store. Look for the blue Socially Fit icon. When combined with data analysis capabilities, you not only feel the effects of your fitness routine, you also see the graphical progress of your results. The app makes the complex simple, so that more of your time is spent sculpting your physique, with less time tracking your results with old-fashioned pen and paper. Download it today to begin a new year with data to show your progress in meeting your goals. Are you socially fit?
Well, I certainly hope everyone listening will become socially fit if they're not. We're back with Jared Kaminsky and Sherry Payne. Jared, would you share the information on your website and where people can get your wonderful book?
January, you can find Tom and I at www.motivactgroup.com. Motivact, MOTIVACT group.com. And our book is One Door Closes, Overcoming Adversity by Following Your Dreams, which you can get to through that site, or you can also get it on Amazon.
Wonderful. And I hope everyone listening will order the book. Jared, did you have some questions for Sherry?
Well, I just wanted to know, Sherry, what you've had this big, full life so far. What words of wisdom do you have to share with the listeners today?
Well, as it says in the book, I think, always redream your dreams. Uh-huh. I know a lot of times we have dreams and we never get to fulfill them, or we give up for whatever reasons. And but just don't give up on your dreams. Redream the dream. And just sometimes you might have to just sit quietly and meditate and just picture in your mind the things that you want. You never know. You never know what God is going to do. And my faith has really sustained me. Sometimes I pump myself up and remember the dreams that I used to have so long ago. My life is not over, and God is not through with me yet. And he has not brought me this far to leave me. And I encourage myself. I love to listen to classical music, and that's when I really can redream my dream. But so do everything that you can to enhance whatever your talent is or your passion is. And to keep that passion alive, keep that flame burning, just keep dreaming. There's nothing wrong with dreaming. At least you, if you didn't complete your dream, at least you tried. Nothing beats a failure but a try. So just sometimes you have to encourage yourself. Sometimes you can't listen to friends. You might have to tune out certain people or even disassociate yourself with certain people. Negativity. Cut out all negativity. Or the whining. Don't whine. Don't listen to whiners. I love that.
Thank you. Thank you for the plug, darling. Now,
we just have a brief,
this interview, I could do this forever. I'm sorry it's coming to an end. Would you share with us your definition of success, Sherry, today as we speak?
Success is being happy. Sometimes just because you have money doesn't mean that you're successful. You might be successful in terms of the world, but you're in the world but not of the world. You can have all the money in the world and be miserable on the inside and everything going wrong behind closed doors. You just don't know. And there are people I've met who had little money, but they were so happy. I love getting together with my friends. And these are just ordinary people, but they're wonderful people, and they are genuine people, no fronts or anything with them, or no facade. They're just genuinely warm, and they want the best for you, and there are no jealousies or envies. Just keep going forward. Each day is a new day, a new opportunity to say all is well, and just remember, there are a lot of people who are a lot worse than you, worse off than you. So be thankful for each day and grateful and make the most of each day. Make the most of your time and just be positive and make every effort you can to achieve what you want to do. And if plan A fails, then go to plan B.
Okay. Or plant seed.
And I do want to mention the project I'm working on, my daughter and son-in-law, A Time to Remember Productions. We're going to be launching a concert here in Los Angeles for future concerts in Las Vegas at one of the major hotels.
And
in 2015 or 16, Frida and I, along with the former ladies, the Supremes, Linda Lawrence, and our friend Joyce Vincent, who completes our group, and my sister Frida Payne, we will host a concert introducing a major act, and we will launch the first concert here in Los Angeles that will be announced very soon in the coming months, and we will take these future concerts to Vegas. It'll be a weekly or a monthly event, A Time to Remember Productions. You can go online and look that up, A Time to Remember Productions.
I'm writing that down, and I hope that that we'll hear back from Sherry. I know all of us would love to go to your concert, and Las Vegas is just up my alley. I'll be there if I know the date.
Maybe Mary Wilson might join us too, but we will introduce and host the evening, whatever major artist it is, be it Stevie Wonder or whomever, Last Night or Earth, Wind, and Fire. No telling who it might be.
Well, you know,
Shauna Payne Phillips and her fiance, Charles Eugene, are working on it right now and very successfully.
Well, we have to go right now, and you are a wonderful guest. And as always, Tom and Jared, I love having you on the show. And you'll be back August 18th, and that's my birthday, so we're going to have a fun party. We'll have a fun party. now to my wonderful listeners, I want you to remember my mantra. If you think it, then you can do it. So for now, dear friends, please stop with the whining and then start smiling and then start sharing our show with everyone you know. And if that doesn't work, then have some wine, cheese, crackers, and start eating chocolate. Lots and lots of chocolate. Thanks to my wonderful guests, Tom and Gracia, Jared Kaminsky, and Sherry Payne. This is January Jones, thanking you for joining me today on my journey and reminding you to take care and stay safe.
We want to thank you for listening to January Jones Sharing Success Stories. Always remember Ms. Jones' personal mantra, if you can think it, you can do it. That's what all of our guests have done with their lives, and so can you. You are the ultimate success coach in your own life. All you need to do will be to start sharing your own story with your family and friends. We hope that our guest stories will encourage you to explore an equation in your future that will combine your creativity, plus connecting with others will enable you to be successful too. Always remember, your passion plus your purpose will equal prosperity as you explore the wonderful world of January Jones.